Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Archery's podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book, John W. Dean's Warren G. Harding the American President series, The 29th President, 1921-1923, is a concise presidential biography that examines Harding's life, political rise, and troubled administration in the aftermath of World War I. Written for the American President series, it aims to provide a clear, accessible account of Harding without reducing him to either a caricature of scandal or a purely sympathetic figure. The book follows Harding from his origins as a newspaper publisher in Marion, Ohio, through his ascent in Republican politics and his unexpected victory in 1920, then into the policy agenda and ethical failures of his presidency. Dean's purpose is to weigh Harding's accomplishments, such as economic stabilization and diplomatic initiatives, against the corruption and reputational damage that defined his legacy. The result is a historical portrait that emphasizes context, political judgment, and the tension between effective governance and personal weakness. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, Harding's rise from local publisher to national compromise candidate. A central strength of the book is its attention to Harding's unusual political ascent. Dean presents Harding not as a naturally dominant national figure, but as a man whose career advanced through local credibility, party relationships, and a careful public style. Harding's work at the Marion Star, his success in Ohio politics, and his reputation as an agreeable Republican insider helped make him acceptable to party leaders searching for a unifying nominee in 1920. That path matters because it explains both his appeal and his limitations. Harding was not chosen for a sweeping reform vision. He was chosen because he seemed safe, familiar, and politically manageable. The biography uses this trajectory to show how early 20th century party politics could elevate a candidate whose greatest asset was not ideological force, but broad acceptability. In that sense, the book frames Harding's presidency as the product of a political system seeking stability after turmoil, which also helps explain why his administration later struggled with discipline and coherence. Secondly, normalcy as a response to war fatigue and political instability, Dean treats Harding's return to normalcy slogan as more than a campaign catchphrase. It becomes the organizing idea behind his appeal to voters exhausted by war, social disruption, labor conflict, and the moral urgency of the Wilson era. The book shows that Harding's promise was intentionally vague, but that vagueness was politically effective because it signaled rest and restraint rather than ad-tailed program. This matters because it reveals the gap between rhetorical comfort and governing reality. Once in office, Harding had to translate a mood into policy, and the administration moved toward lower taxes, reduced wartime controls, budget reform, and a more business-friendly climate. Dean's analysis suggests that normalcy was not simply a retreat from politics. It was a political strategy for restoring confidence in institutions after a period of national strain. At the same time, the book implies that this style of leadership had limits. A presidency built around calming public expectations can succeed in the short term, but it can also encourage ambiguity, weak supervision, and an over-reliance on trusted allies rather than rigorous administrative discipline. Thirdly, economic policy, pro-business governance, and the post-war recovery agenda. The biography gives substantial attention to Harding's domestic program, especially his emphasis on fiscal restraint and business recovery. Dean describes an administration that supported lower taxes, reduced government intervention, a federal budget system, and protective tariffs, all intended to stabilize the economy after the disruptions of World War I. These policies are important in the book because they show Harding as part of a broader Republican effort to reassert pre-war economic orthodoxies. Rather than presenting these measures as merely ideological, Dean situates them as responses to inflation, debt, and uncertainty in the early 1920s. The book also makes clear that these decisions were politically popular and economically consequential, even if historians debate their long-term equity and effectiveness. Harding's support for pro-business measures helped define the early foundations of the 1920s boom, but Dean does not treat prosperity as proof of sound leadership alone. Instead, the book encourages readers to see domestic policy as a blend of practical stabilization and political advantage. That balance gives the biography analytical value. It shows how Harding's presidency could produce real administrative results while still lacking strong ethical and managerial coherence. Fourthly, foreign policy pragmatism and the Washington Naval Conference. Dean presents Harding's foreign policy as one of the more credible parts of his presidency, especially through the Washington Naval Conference. The book uses this episode to show that Harding was not simply disengaged from world affairs. He could support diplomacy when it aligned with American interests and public fatigue with international commitments. The conference, which helped limit naval armaments and reduce tensions among major powers, fits the book's broader portrait of Harding as a pragmatic rather than visionary leader. Instead of pursuing Wilsonian internationalism, Harding favored measured agreements that would avoid entanglement while promoting stability. This approach reflects the book's larger theme of post-war retrenchment. The United States was not retreating from the world entirely, but it was trying to manage obligations more cautiously. Dean's treatment also shows how Harding's administration pursued foreign policy through a combination of restraint and selective engagement, rather than dramatic ideological crusades. That makes this portion of the book useful for readers interested in how domestic political pressures shaped international decision-making in the early 1920s. It also helps explain why Harding's presidency cannot be understood only through scandal, since his administration did achieve meaningful diplomatic outcomes. Lastly, scandal, weak oversight, and the collapse of Harding's historical reputation, the most important limitation of Harding's presidency, and the book's most unavoidable subject, is the corruption that surrounded his administration. Dean addresses the Teapot Dome scandal and related abuses not simply as isolated crimes, but as evidence of a broader failure of supervision. Harding's reliance on personal loyalty, his discomfort with conflict, and his tendency to trust friends and political allies created conditions in which misconduct could flourish. The biography does not reduce Harding to corruption alone, but it shows that his failure to control subordinates became central to how history remembers him. This part of the book is especially valuable because it explains the gap between Harding the candidate and Harding the president, a man who sounded reassuring in public, could preside over administrative disorder in private. Dean also explores the human dimension of that collapse, portraying Harding as increasingly aware that something was wrong, yet unable or unwilling to confront it decisively. The result is a portrait of leadership undone by caution, favoritism, and poor judgment. The book stands out by treating scandal as both a moral issue and a structural one, linking individual weakness to institutional failure. In conclusion, this book is best suited for readers who want a compact but serious account of Warren G. Harding, especially students of U.S. presidential history, political biography, and the early 1920s. It will also appeal to general readers who know Harding mainly through scandal and want a more balanced explanation of what his presidency actually accomplished and where it failed. One of its main benefits is that it places Harding in context the post-war economy, Republican Party strategy, public fatigue with reform politics, and the administrative culture of the era all shape the story. That makes the book more useful than a simple scandal narrative, compared with more sweeping Harding biographies. Dean's volume is narrower and more accessible, but it still offers a disciplined interpretation of how a president can be simultaneously effective, cautious, and deeply vulnerable to corruption around him. Its distinctive value lies in that balance. It does not try to excuse Harding, but it does resist reducing him to the worst episodes of his administration. For readers seeking a concise, historically grounded introduction to a frequently misunderstood presidency, it provides a clear and credible entry point. If you would like to support John W. Dean, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.